Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome to Logical Soul Talk. My name is Michael Craig, and I'm your host for this weekly talk radio program. This is a show where I either get to interview some of the best, brightest, and most creative people in the world, or talk about subjects near and dear to my heart. Now, during this 60-minute program today, I'm going to focus on a very special guest, Mr. Jim Straw. But first, a little background. You see, as a chiropractor for many years, I discovered that most people, including myself, have an underlying pattern of what I call hidden decisions that we made as small children or picked up from our parents, teachers, or even our ancestors. And these subconscious decisions form our reality and affect our motivation and our destiny and our actions. Consequently, these hidden decisions can either propel us to greatness or lead us to self-sabotage and failure. Quite by accident, many years ago, I discovered I could access and change these hidden decisions to allow amazing results to happen in my own and other people's lives. And you can get more information on my technique and how I'm training life coaches and others to use and spread this technology at www.mycoachtraining.com. My goal today, and in every show, is that you walk away with something powerful you can use in your life that will add to your motivation and nourish what I call your seed of success. Whether you're a coach or just want to transform your life, this show is for you. So listen and take notes. After about 10 and 15 minutes, usually I have you call in for your comments and questions to our show hotline. But today, with our special guest, we're doing a pre-recorded show, so that's not going to be possible. However, I want to thank you for listening, and stay tuned every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for more great interviews. Now back to tonight's guest, Mr. Jim Straw. We're talking with Jim Straw up in Dalton, Georgia, and he's you might call him a marketing guru. He's been doing this more than I've been on the earth, I guess. And he knows more in his little finger than probably most guys know in their whole experience. And Mr. Jim, thank you for letting us come and talk to you today.
Well, goodness, I'm glad to have you here, dude. Well, I've been in business for over 50 years now. I've owned and operated successful businesses in retail, wholesale, manufacturing, mining, publishing. And when I bought a bank, my mother said, "Jim, don't be silly. People don't own banks." But I did. Right. And I've written about 700 books, booklets, reports, articles, manuscripts, programs over the years. Most all of them have been self-published, except the one I've got now that I've let a publisher publish. You know, he's going to make a book out of it. So.
What's the name of that book again? You mentioned it earlier.
Mustard Seeds, Shovels, and Mountains. It's how to achieve success with using physio-psychic power. It comes from that, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains if you get a shovel.
But you need a shovel.
That's it. Almost all of the, like, magic of believing and thinking grow rich, they lead you to believe it. All you have to do is believe it, and it'll happen. Mm-hmm. That's like believing you're going to win the lottery, but if you don't buy a ticket, you're not going to win the lottery.
That's true.
It's true. The same thing in anything in your life. You have to do something. There has to be a physical application to your psychic abilities. I call it physio-psychic power. Mm-hmm. And it's strictly using your brain to create a thought, but then doing something to make that thought come to fruition. Mm-hmm. So it'll be published this, I think, within the next week or so. I'm supposed to have some books. So
this is being recorded. What's the date today? February the 22nd,
23rd.
February 23rd, 2012. Talking with Mr. Jim Straw, marketing genius. And what I remember you said something during a recent event that we attended, and because I talked to you, I said, "Did you know a guy named Joe Carbo?" And you said, "Yeah, you did."
Oh yeah.
And you talked about always going business with him. You want to tell a little bit? Because I remember Joe Carbo. I bought this book, The Lazy Man's Way to Riches. And I think that was published in the mid '60s or something.
Something like that.
And, yeah. Yeah. And I thought that was great. And I read everything. Of course, I didn't get rich, but it did plant the seed for me to do a whole lot of stuff later on.
Everybody thought that Joe Carbo started with that book, but actually, Joe Carbo started right after World War II. Have you seen those little ads in the comic books that says you can see through doors?
Yeah.
That's Joe Carbo.
Really?
He bought a closeout of these little deals you put in the door to look out.
Right.
Those peepholes.
Right.
And I think he bought them for like a nickel a piece or whatever, and then he sold them for a dollar a piece. And he did that, and he had other little items that he sold, mail order. And then when he wrote The Lazy Man's Way to Riches, he originally wrote the ad. He took it over to Don Perry at Money Making Opportunities magazine.
Uh-huh.
Don set the ad up and put it in the magazine. Joe hadn't even started writing the book. He didn't know what the book was going to be about.
Gotcha.
And then it hit big. Oh, God, it hit big.
Oh, my God.
It's still a big seller. Then I got to know Joe over the years and exchanged letters and telephone calls with him. And about a week and a half or so before he died, he and I were making plans to get together in Las Vegas. He had his Society of Partners.
Uh-huh.
And I had the American Business Club, and we were going to put them together. And like I say, I got a call saying that Joe Dunn left. So.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he passed on to greater rewards, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. So how did you get started? I mean, I know that you've been doing this a long time. What was the first seed in your mind that just sort of started grabbing you and getting involved with this entrepreneurial marketing stuff? What was that?
Well, I've been doing it all my life.
Right.
I started off at the age of 9, 10, selling cloverleaf salve and grit newspaper. I was one of the first dealers for TV Guide.
Oh, really?
It was 15 cents a week. You know, little TV Guide, we had three channels. You know, and it was 15 cents a week and a penny tax.
Uh-huh.
I had to collect sales tax for Kansas because they said,
goodness.
You know, 15 cents, and then they have a penny more for tax. And I sold Christmas cards and everything else, anything else.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I also ran hay hauling crews. I had a truck and a loader and a crew that we hauled bales of hay out of the field. I also did all kind of ranch maintenance work. So that was
You've pretty much been a jack of all trades, just doing getting
master of none,
getting experience and stuff. Actually, I heard that phrase. My dad used to call me that, sort of derogatorily. He says, "Jack of all trades, master of none." But I recently heard from some of the more successful entrepreneurs that's what they want to be, because it's like you want to know a lot of things, but not master them, because you want to delegate that stuff out.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you can delegate, but you got to know what you're delegating.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, too many people try to delegate and don't even know how to do it themselves. A lot of things I didn't know how to do that I hired people to do, but I watched them and learned from them. And when I got into any kind of business venture, I spent money on books. I went to the library and studied those kinds of businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went into the banking industry, I bought over $3,000 worth of books on banking. How it's done, how to do it, and all of that. And, of course, I bought some beautiful export courses. Found out that most of them were ridiculous. They were unnecessary because it's nothing more than selling something overseas and
mm-hmm.
shipping it to them.
Mm-hmm. that's about it. So what happened? You went and bought a bank, and then you learned how to run a bank?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, just making sure that was what...
Well,
I
needed a bank for my customers.
I got you.
And so, if you need a typewriter, you buy a typewriter. You need a bank, you buy a bank. I mean, that's just part of the game.
Then you buy the books, learn how to use it.
That's it.
I like your style. That's great. That's really... So, essentially, you weren't afraid to take chances. You did a lot of... I wouldn't call it risk. I mean, there's a difference between risk-taking and being risky.
Entrepreneurs are risk-takers. We take calculated risks.
Exactly.
If something's way too risky,
mm-hmm.
nobody's going to touch it.
Right.
I won't touch it. There are a number I had a guy here contact me last year, had a deal going to make us a gazillion dollars, and it probably would. He wanted to set up a legal marijuana shop. Yeah, hey, that's fine and dandy, but that's not exactly my cup of tea.
Right.
That's a risk I really wouldn't want to take.
Exactly. Right. So, bungee jumping off of assessment is probably risky.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. So what was it, what was the the thing that inspired you as a kid? I mean, what sort of reached out and grabbed you and said, this is what I want to do. I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a businessman. Was there any one particular incident that you remember?
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I lived in Kansas, oil country.
You were born there?
No, born in Oklahoma, but raised in Missouri and Kansas. And I was a kid, and this big Cadillac drives up, and the guy leans out, where can I find so-and-so, you know, looking for so-and-so's place. So I told him, and then he spun his wheels and sped out and threw dirt all over me. And I said, that's it, by God, I'm going to own me a Cadillac, too. And I've driven Cadillacs for over 40 years now. I've driven this last one for 15 years because Cadillac hadn't built another car. They keep coming out with these little sardine cans with a Cadillac emblem, and I'm not going to have one of those.
So the guy spit dirt in your face, and it just made you mad, and you decided to get even by becoming successful and buying your own.
That's right.
So you can spend dirt in other people's hands.
But then
you probably haven't done that.
In my new book, I tell how I establish my goals, how to establish your goals. Most people establish a goal like, I'm going to be rich.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's fine. But then you have to break it down and keep updating it. Mm-hmm. People write their goal once. You're supposed to write your goal, read it, set a date for its completion. Well, that's fine and dandy. But I set a goal to be a millionaire by my 25th birthday. I set the date, going to be a millionaire. I was 25 years old. I was pretty close. 3 months later, my businesses were robbed. All of my inventory was stolen. They wiped out, they picked up everything of any value. I had to start all over darn near from zero again.
Right, right.
So you can establish those goals and all that. I like to set intermediate goals, like by such and such a date, I want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And go from there. And then they say it in some of these books, they say, you have to have passion. You have to be obsessed. Well, you know what they call a guy that's passionate, starts stalking women, don't you? You know, hey, it's the same way in business. And some of these people that get like Enron and like that, they get so involved in the making of the money that, hey, they'll do any damn thing in the world to make that money. Now, it's the same way in business. You can't establish a goal and be obsessive about it, because if you are, it's liable to bite you.
I've heard passion expressed in different ways. Like some people say, well, I'm passionate about collecting stamps, or I'm passionate about, you know, whatever.
As long
you're passionate about being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, as long as they don't go out and steal the stamps. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there's a sense of ethics that's, I think the golden rule works hand in hand with that.
Well, I think a lot of it is brought on by our educational system, because the school teachers themselves teach these students that business is corrupt.
Mm.
And in order to make any money, you've got to be corrupt. Then they go off to business college and they figure, well, I'm going to have to be a little sneaky in order to make this work.
Mm.
And so they end up with Enron or Solardyne or one of those.
Mm.
Where, and they say, the job market, you got to have jobs. They keep looking at the big companies.
Mm-hmm.
Only 20% of the employees are in those big companies. 80% of the employees are employed by people like me, small entrepreneurial operations.
Right.
But, like I say, and I found that in the business community, the more honest the business person is, the bigger and better their business is.
Mm-hmm. Well, who were some of your mentors growing up? I mean, I know you had probably a few of them. Anybody you want to name?
Well, not actually anyone you would even know, because I like to sit and visit with the old rich men around town when I carried my newspaper. Had the old man Blood owned all the orchards in that area in Kansas. And, of course, he's retired, living there by himself. And every time I'd go to collect for the newspaper, we'd sit and talk for an hour, and he'd tell me about things he had done and how he had done them. And then there were other old business people like that I would sit at their knee and listen to them.
Right.
And they would tell stories, and I would do what they said to do.
That's great. Any particular advice that they said that you can remember that was real helpful at the time, or just a whole bunch of stuff?
Just a whole bunch of stuff. It was all good information about how they had done things, why they had done. Oh, talking about blood, I went to his house to collect for the newspaper one day, and he showed me some piggy banks sitting around, and he said, "Those saved my life." Uh-huh. I said, "How'd that?" He said, "When the banks all failed, there was no money anywhere." He said, "The wife and I had this collection of piggy banks. They were sitting all over the house." And he said, "I went and opened those piggy banks." He said, "I had enough to make payroll." And he said, "I had enough to stay in business."
Wow.
And so, you know, that was. And then he showed me another time, he showed me a stack of letters with stamps on them, envelopes with stamps on them. He was telling me how many thousands they were worth. And he said, "I collected these over the years right out of the mail. Any fancy-looking stamp or whatever," he said, "I'd throw it in a box." Uh-huh. I got a box filled with old stamps that I collected over the years.
Really?
But they're commemoratives and things like that. And he said, "Now," he said, "back then, they weren't worth anything. Today, they're worth a small fortune." So.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea. I know Dave Ramsey, I don't know if you know about him, but he talks about developing an emergency fund or getting an emergency fund and just put it to the side and don't touch it. That's for living for bad times, things
right.
like that. So he says it's the same advice your grandma would give you. Which,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I guess would be the case. So you were born in Oklahoma, grew up in Iowa.
No, grew up in Missouri and Kansas.
Missouri and Kansas.
I was born in Oklahoma, and I had two brothers and two sisters born in Missouri. Then we moved over to outside of Wichita, Kansas. Dad went to work for Boeing Aircraft.
Oh, okay. So your dad was an engineer, or what did he do?
No, 10th grade education. But he could read a blueprint like even the engineers couldn't.
Uh-huh.
And he built the first jigs for the B-52.
Wow.
And worked on the first jigs for the 707, working for Boeing.
Wow.
So he became a master jig builder. Like I say, 10th grade education, but he could do the job.
Yeah, knew how to do the job. So ask, do you all have any questions you want to ask Jim?
I had a question.
Yeah, what's your question, Sia?
With your history of knowledge of being in the business game, what is one thing that no matter what the internet is trying to do that it cannot emulate or try to do in terms of being successful in a business?
How do you mean?
For example, internet may be attempting to do, I don't know, like there's something that no matter what, offline can do it better than online can do it. Is there one thing or two things that you can think of that you can't?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
Business is business is business. It makes no difference whether it's a grocery store or a bank. It's all the same procedures. If you're into specific of some kind, get books on that specific subject. One of the big problems with the internet is that there are so many people out there claiming to know how to do things and tell you how to do them, and they're just rehashing the old crap that has been around that no one has ever done, but they keep saying it can be done. And matter of fact, I tell people, ask the guru what he's done besides write about it. Has he ever done it? I haven't written about anything that I haven't done. All of my reports and everything are from my own personal hands-on experience.
So what? Give us an example of what some of the marketing, without naming names, obviously, but some examples of things you've seen that just don't work.
Oh, well.
Or not true. I mean, actually, I've heard somebody say advertising is legalized lying, but but maybe you could shed some light on some of these examples that people get.
Well, according to Thomas Jefferson, the only truth in a newspaper is the ads. But unfortunately, they've taken that too far now, and well, these gurus that tell you that, you know, you can make money, all you got to do is have this program and push a button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one button.
One button, you know, like push a button and you start making money. And sucker that I am, I said, I'm going to find out. And I've tried three or four of them. Not a one of them work. And I've got a good following, so, you know, it's just, these people have rather, like, oh, I can tell you stories of people that have made gazillions of dollars in the mail order industry. And they tell you those stories, like you can do it.
Right.
But that's one time that one person did it,
right.
And you're not him.
Yeah, I know some marketers will say, well, you can earn $193,000 in 4 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And they point to the PayPal or whatever, the ClickBank receipts, and show that, look, I've done this. Of course, they only did it once in their life,
yeah.
And then they had to pay the affiliates out of that $100,000, and then they had to pay for the pay-per-click another $50,000, so they netted, what, $10,000 out of that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Those yeah. are things they don't tell you, right?
Well, I've known some of the one-timers. Mm-hmm. I could mention some names that probably you know who I'm talking about,
yeah.
But one time in their life, they hit a fluky Buford, and they got it right and made a gazillion dollars overnight.
Hmm.
They've never done it again, and they've tried over and over. Joe Carbo. Joe used to tell me, see, Joe made money constantly in mail order since right after the war.
Huh.
I mean, he was there constantly making money in mail order. His lazy man's way to riches just broke the bank, all right? And Joe was telling me, a mother soul before he died, said, oh, Jim, just one more time before I die, I'd like to come up with another lazy man's way to riches.
That's great.
And me, see, I've never had a winner like that. I've never really had one of those big one-time winners. I just keep hitting those singles and just keep bringing in the money. You know, some of my material is over 30 years old,
yeah.
But it's still viable. It works every day.
Yeah, give us some examples of that so we can promote a little bit what you've got going on. And
oh,
get
well.
Get your website out while you're at it.
I think there are 12 different reports out there. It's businesslyceum.com. And let's see. I've got my mail order marketing manual. You can make a fortune in mail order. And all that does is explain all the things that these... 99% of the crap out there about getting rich in mail order is a bunch of hooey. And break it down. I'd break it down so exactly so you can follow it. If you can follow it, you can make money. But I'm not going to promise you're going to make a ton of money. Because you've got to do the work. And I tell you how to step by step, piece by piece. Same thing, I've got an internet marketing book. I didn't write it until I was making money as an affiliate marketer. Because many of these guys tell you how many millions of dollars can be made, but
it's
just
than
not
it sounds.
There.
It's
oh, yeah.
Than it sounds.
And so I tell people how to do it, how to create your email campaigns and all of that. And Sell American is an export course. And what brought that about is I had a review copy of a new export course that came in, 600 pages. 8 and 9 point type on how to set up letters of credit, how to write letters of credit, how to do all of your own, you know, everything.
Wow.
But anybody that's in export doesn't mess with that. You make a sale overseas, you get a letter of credit paying for it, you take it to the bank, call a freight forwarder, the freight forwarder takes it and sends it. The first export course I took, I made my first export order. I filled out all the documentation, the paperwork, and everything, and took it down to Railway Express, and delivered it with all the paperwork, and the guy looked at me and says, you took that course, didn't you? I said, yeah. He said, well, I need this.
Oh.
Threw the rest of it in the trash. And that's all you need, and that's what I explain in the export course, is that it's nothing more than selling, and wherever you're selling, and then ship it to them.
Yeah.
But they make such a big deal out of it. Your banker will handle all the financial work. A freight forwarder will take care of getting it out of the country and to your customer.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
And I explain where to buy it.
A good freight forwarder is important. Because I know we do. My wife does a little bit of that to Canada mostly.
Yeah. Yellow pages and in the newspaper, in the yellow pages,
yeah.
The telephone book.
Yeah.
Just look under freight forwarding. There's a ton of them.
Well, I know some of them will do special services to you, like blind ship or some of these things. I don't know exactly how it works.
Well, anyway. Right back some time ago when I was getting into exporting, doing some, if you exported through the post office, every package had to be tied with string. And a lot of times people come in with a package they want to export, and the postmaster will have a ball of string and tie string on it because that's the regulation said it had to be. Nowadays, you just, they're exporting like a freight forwarding, you can take it to UPS office. They can ship it anywhere in the world. They'll handle all the paperwork and everything.
Yeah, pretty much. So what let's see, you've got another question over here. David, you got a question you want to ask?
Yeah.
Hold on, let me give you that.
If you had to start over completely from scratch, what would be the first thing you do?
That's a good question. Go ahead and answer that, Jim.
Oh, Lord. I probably would go into just local retail. That's the easiest business to get into. It's the quickest money. You just open the door and sell the things. Of course, you have to do one thing that most of them don't do. That's advertise.
Yes,
it is. Any type of retail or just?
Any type of retail.
Hopefully something people want.
Right? Oh, yeah. I'd look around and see what was popular. That's what I'd probably get into.
Well, I know up here in North Georgia, and particularly Tennessee and places, the dollar stores are real popular.
Oh, yes.
Get a dollar store franchise or something like that.
But, of course, you know, I've been a finder all my life. I've always done that. Back when I was on the farm as a kid, Farmer Smith had a tractor, and Farmer Brown needed a tractor. I'd introduce the two and earn a commission on it. And I've been doing that. I've done it with just about everything and anything you can imagine all over the world. And I could still do that. But as far as if I was going into a business, it would be just a local retail business. Otherwise, I would probably simply go out and do some finding, find some things and find some buyers for it. That's what I teach in my How to Be a Millionaire course. Is so many people worry about having something to sell. Got to have something to sell, something to sell. No, you need somebody who'll buy it. And so a friend of mine and I developed a little plan of creating a list of buyers. We know what they buy, how many they buy, how much they pay. And when we come along with something that they could use, we simply call them up and say, we've got them. There was no selling to it, just, you know.
Just an order fulfillment.
That's
service,
it.
Basically.
Oh,
yeah. That's an interesting way to do it. You just go around, canvas your neighbor, canvas your local businesses or industry, find out who needs what, and then start making a list and make a few phone calls and start connecting the dots.
That's it. But now, like I say, I haven't done that for a few years because I'm old and tired. I don't need the, I don't have to chase the rainbow anymore.
Right.
All the others have to keep chasing rainbows. I caught mine.
That's interesting because really you're talking, you're talking about being an affiliate of sorts. You're basically representing or buying from this source and connecting the dots and putting the two together.
Well, really, I never do any buying. I never do any buying or selling.
Well, neither does an affiliate.
No, the seller does the selling. I just introduce the buyer.
Right.
But, you know, that, well, someone has 100,000 widgets, and you know a guy that buys widgets and can use 100,000 of them, and you've got a price that can he can't get anywhere else. You just tell him, and then the seller writes you a commission check.
Right. That's a way of doing business. I remember as a kid, I share this with my folks as well. In my book, I talk about it. And then as a kid, I never ate much candy, so during Halloween, I'd go around collecting all this candy. And then a week later, when all the kids were having their sugar rushes, I'd get my little cardboard store out in the front yard and sell the candy.
Why not?
Have to have their candy fixed and they come over and buy the candy. So, just supply and demand.
That's
it. What people want.
That's
it. What you're willing to sell.
And the whole thing is to know what your buyers want. And people say, well, you've got so many different subjects out there. Yeah, because I'm not looking for specific buyers anymore. My efforts in publishing my material is to have it out there available for the next generation. That's all. And, of course, I make a nice little piece of change doing it. But the thing is, that it's not so much to sell each of those items as it is simply to make them available. Because there are so many young people that want to get into things, but they don't know how to start. Right. They don't know what to do. And I've already done it.
Well, you've got a wealth of information and experience to go along with it, that's for sure. What's the name of, now, you call it the, give them your websites again so people will know where to go.
BusinessLyceum.com.
Spell Lyceum for me.
L-Y-C-E-U-M.
.com.
Right. BusinessLyceum.com. It's got all the information out there about me and about my books, and then there's, what, 11 years worth of my e-letter with all kind of topics in it.
Oh, I imagine that's pretty filled with stuff, huh?
12 years, 13 years, yeah, a long time.
So you gave us a little bit of information about how you got started, about what inspired you to get started, Cadillacs, and your first mentor, which was Mr. Blood, I think it was.
That was one of many. Because there was Jack Bannon and Jim Taylor and
all the
local businessmen that had made it. Some of them were retired and just living there. Others were handling their businesses and. I listened to them, and unlike all the parents loved me. The kids couldn't stand me, but all the parents loved me because I'd sit and listen to them.
Right. That's a rare talent.
Yeah.
That's a rare talent. Well, you've got three of us come making a pilgrimage to Dalton to sit at your feet and get some pearls of wisdom here.
Oh, yeah, I don't see any of you genuflecting now.
Well, get down. Come on down, David. David Wright and C.F. Jackson, and I'm Michael Craig. And we're here interviewing Jim Wright.
Jim Wright?
No, that's David Wright. We're talking Jim Straw, excuse me. I've got a little...
Just Jim. Mr. Straw was my daddy. I have two sons that like to be Mr. Straw. One of them even lets his wife call him Mr. Straw.
Oh, my goodness.
Privilege.
So, if you don't mind my asking, how old are you? Or when's your birthday coming up? You don't give any information.
I quit telling my age when I was 16 years old. I had put together a contract. I was doing ranch work, and I put together a contract where I would handle all of that for 5 ranches. And I would handle the crews and everything, and then they would pay me, and then I would take care of all the crews. And I set the whole thing up, I had the lawyer draw up the contract, and went in to sign the contract, and, everybody was in agreement, looked good. And then one guy at the table says, "Well, Jim, how old are you?" And I said, "I'm 16. He said, "Hell, I don't pay damn kids games." And he tore up the contract. I said, "That's it." And I haven't told my age since.
Really?
Even my wife wasn't exactly sure how old I was.
You still don't want people to know you're not over 18, is it?
No.
Okay. Well, let's put it this way. Jim's had a lot of experience here, so we're going to leave it at that. Go on to the next subject here.
Yeah, I've done a few things.
So what's... I know you've got a lot going on now. Tell us a little bit about some other people that you got involved with over the years, maybe during the 60s or 70s, some more interesting experiences that you had in marketing and business.
Well, I put together a major seafoods contract out of Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, lobsters and shrimps, and...
Which company was that with? I was there for 4.5 months. I might know.
Where?
Sri Lanka.
Oh, it was Remo and Sons.
In Colombo?
Yeah, Remo.
Remo. I don't know them, but I know Colombo. I've been to Colombo.
I worked with the Sarasavi Institute. Well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was, before it was Sri Lanka. Yeah, I was there in 87, so. Yeah.
Oh, God, this was before that was 70.
Before a bridge over River Kwai, I guess.
70. 273, somewhere along there.
Oh, okay.
Worked with a guy on that contract by the name of Frank Souza. You've probably seen his name around.
Oh, I know
around.
Frank. He's been to the JV at work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Frank Souza and I worked together on that deal for 2 years.
Wow.
So, anywho, whatever.
So that work out okay?
No. It ended up, the buyer was no damn good and the seller wasn't worth a damn.
Okay.
We had the contracts and all of that. But I did make some money off of it. While I was there in Ceylon, we were putting together some shipping pallets. Hmm. And I told the guy, get me a hammer. And he brings me this damn hammer. And I said, no, I want a claw hammer. What's that?
They don't know what claw hammers are.
Didn't know what a claw hammer was. Yeah. So I shipped a bunch of claw hammers over there and made a nice piece of chain selling claw hammers. Now, everything can lead to an opportunity if you keep your eyes open and your wits about you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Most people walk past more money than they ever make.
That's
keep
true.
Stepping over dollars to pick up dimes.
That's true. That's true. What's what are some of the most, it's not a pleasant subject, but one of the most frustrating things that you've noticed in business that you've been able to overcome or have advice for people to watch out for? And there's probably so many to name, but name one of the biggest ones there.
Well, there was an old black millionaire here in Atlanta for many years, used to come by my office a couple times a month and have coffee with me. If I had white businessmen in my office, he'd step up to the door and say, Mr. Jim, I's going over, get me a sandwich. You all want a sandwich? Well, now, this guy could have bought and sold all of them in my office, including me.
My goodness.
And I used to cuss him about playing that damn step and fetch it. But he taught me so many lessons, and one of them being whenever anybody plays a race card of any kind, get the hell away from them.
Yeah.
He said it makes no difference whether it's a white man playing a race card or a black man. He said, get the hell away from them. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't deal with them, if they, you know.
Yeah.
Because he said, and that is probably one of the biggest problems we have in business is, well, it's not just the race card. They have other, you won't do business with me because I'm ill. And they got some idiotic, stupid idea why you won't do business with them or why they can't do business with you. And the whole thing is, none of it means a damn thing. People who do business is actually the only level playing field in the world because you only get what you earn. You don't get advantages for being ugly. You get advantages for doing something. Hmm. If you don't do it, you don't get it. And he said, anytime somebody plays those damn cards, forget it. You know, that's the kind of people you got to get the hell away from fast.
Well, would you make one exception, and that would be integrity? In other words, if a person lacks integrity or lacks honesty.
Well, if they lack integrity or honesty, you just won't deal with them to begin with.
Right, exactly.
I won't.
So that would be a disqualifier.
Oh, yeah.
That would be something
about yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And here lately, there's too many of them. They follow that adage, you know, you got to be a little crooked to make any money.
Well, you got to be a little sneaky. You got to have an angle. You got to have something going on, That's in all business, internet marketing or any other kind, for that matter. So, what other pearls of wisdom would you have to share with us? And what if somebody were just starting out, say, being a coach or being a mentor or being a business person, entrepreneur? What would you say would be the first thing they should do?
Quit thinking about it
and start doing it. Right?
People think of business to death. They think of 1,000 different things that need to be done, 1,000 things they should do, 1,000 things they shouldn't do. You're going to do it? Then do it. You'll learn as you go. An old Greek saying is that, what is it? I can't even remember it now. Something about that.
Those Greeks, they had sayings, I tell you.
Well, the weaving will teach you how to do it.
Right.
If you're doing the weaving, it'll teach you what to do as you weave. Mm. It's the same thing with business. Oh, you're going to make mistakes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent all that money on banking books. I still made mistakes.
Right.
I'm human, unfortunately.
But you only make mistakes usually once.
Oh, yeah, you better just make them once. Yeah. No, smart, not lucky.
That's right.
Whenever you make a mistake, don't do it again.
Make a new mistake.
Yeah. Find a new way to make the same mistake.
I've done that for sure.
Oh, yes.
So we're talking with Jim Straw. This is Logical Soul Talk. And Jim Straw is a marketing expert and a very experienced businessman. Tell us, Jim, what is the... I guess the question would be more a generalized question about business itself. How do you see business going in the country? How do you see the economy shaping up? How do you see entrepreneurs? Do you see more of that coming out? Do you see less of it? How do you see the business
in
general?
It's always the same. I've made money from Eisenhower to Obama.
Uh-huh.
Through thick and thin, I've seen inflation so bad it was pitiful. And now we've got recession, 2% interest rate? Back in the 70s, it was like 17, 18,
20%. Yeah, 19% interest rate
on mortgages. You just do what you're doing. You decide you're going to do something, do it. You may get knocked down and drug out, but hey, you can pick yourself up and start over again. That's the problem, is people fail once and quit. You know, I can count my successes on my fingers and toes. I count my failures, I got to use the hair on my chest, you know.
It's like when somebody asked Babe Ruth how many times he struck out, he says, I know every 11 times I struck out, I get a home run.
Yeah.
That's how he made the record, the home runs.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how you do. You fail a number of times, you can keep record of how many times you fail for success, and you can pretty much...
Bill Gates here said it here, a couple years ago. Success doesn't teach you anything. You only learn from failures.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've known guys that have hit it real big, all of a sudden, one time, whoopee, and never again.
All right.
Because it was an accident. It was a fluke.
Wow.
Where if you start something and you make a mistake and fail, you won't make that mistake again. You try again. And you make another mistake, you won't do it. And then you got a whole bunch of mistakes you're not going to make, and guess what? It works.
Yeah.
You learn from your mistakes.
That's true. It's sort of like climbing a mountain. You're going to slip a little bit, you get another foothold, you go a little higher, and then you're going to slip some more, a little higher, and you might get beat up and bruised. It's going to take you some time, but you'll get there. A lot of people just want to take the helicopter to the peak and pay the driver, and hopefully the profit from being at the peak will pay for the driver and the trip down, right?
And people keep buying into that they're going to get rich quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got rich quick. Took me about 20 years, but I got rich quick.
Like Willie Nelson said, it took me 30 years to be an overnight success.
That's it. That's what it takes.
Yeah. That's fascinating. You know, is there anything else you want to ask any of you guys out there, or any other questions you have for Jim?
Oh, I have flabbergasted them.
I know you've done that. I'm running out of ideas here. Help me some. You want to take a break? No, we can keep going here. I know we've got... I mean, there's so many things I want to ask, and... Well, I will. I just got this brain infarction that comes on me every once in a while.
You got the same disease I got, Sometimer's disease. Sometimes I remember, sometimes I don't.
Well, tell us a little bit about, you talked about your father just briefly. Said he had 10th grade education, but he knew how to build these, what do you call them, forms or...
The jigs for the airplanes, right.
Was he one of the biggest influences in your life? Or I know he was one of many, because you talked about the businessman.
He had a lot of real great sayings. I'll find out years later that most of them came from Will Rogers.
They sounded good, that's right.
Oh, yeah. He was a, you know, hometown philosopher, kind of, but like I say, came from Will Rogers and Teddy Roosevelt and some of those.
Calvin Coolidge.
Whatever.
That's great. Well, how about your mother? What influence was she on your life? How did she?
Ukrainian out of Canada, uh-huh. And she's still alive. She calls me a
really?
Couple times each week.
Wow.
Tell me how things should be done and how and all.
That's
oh
amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
For many years, she kept asking my wife, "When's Jim going to get a job?" Doris kept trying to explain to her that I didn't need a job. She said, "Well, who writes his paycheck?"
My customer. A lot of little paychecks.
That's it.
That's great.
Yeah, too bad. What's really pitiful is all of these gurus and super business people and everything, their customer list is just that. It's a list of names and addresses. I see my customers as people. Mm-hmm. I treat them like people. You send me an email, I may not tell you what you want to hear, but you will hear from me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and this idea of, well, we're so busy, I'll have my flunkies do it. If you're getting into business, take care of your customers. So many of the business people just simply, it's a name on a list. That's it. I mean, I know things about my customers' families, their lives, I share with them and they share with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it should be.
That's really true. I know we've got, my wife does, as I said, business with some Canadians and a few people out in Colorado and a few other places. We do a little bit of shipping around here, computer stuff. That's another business we have. But it's true. She's known this one guy for 20 years. She's never met him,
mm-hmm.
but she does business with him on a regular basis, and she would trust him with just about anything.
Oh, I've got customers that have been with me for 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's amazing how relationships, just if you don't have that, you're just missing something. Even if you're successful, you're really lacking something. You're really lacking the flavor of that business,
that's it.
Right?
Yep.
So somebody's just starting out and they want to get a business going. What would you suggest them go into? I know you said you would start over retail, but what?
Well, that's
if they say they were young, say in their 20s, something like that. Where would you get them starting there?
Who's the most beautiful woman in the world?
Well,
depends upon who's looking.
My wife, of course.
All right. Well, it's the same thing with business. What is beautiful to one guy wouldn't be to another.
Right.
And it depends upon what advantages you're looking for and what disadvantages you'll accept. And that's whenever people ask me what business should I get into, I always say, who is the most beautiful woman in the world? Because there are businesses that I can do them, but I wouldn't want to. And then there are other businesses that are so complex and everything, I could do them and probably do well at them, but I don't want that kind of hassle. And then there are other businesses that are so simple and easy to operate to me, or they seem to be to me, that I just go ahead and do it.
Hmm.
A person has to look within themselves. Einstein said that anyone can be a genius if they spend just 15 minutes a day on one subject.
Mm-hmm.
But most people won't even spend the time 15 minutes a day on one subject.
Wow. That's true.
So pick what you want and then study it 15 minutes a day.
So that's where your passion comes in, really. Pick on that.
Yeah. But when I was a kid, anytime it was raining or bad weather, I was at the local Copeland Memorial Library, little hometown library, studying books on business, making money, how things are done.
Uh-huh.
I was reading constantly about the things that I might do one of these days. I learned the oil industry because the oil industry was big around there.
Wow.
And later on, someone called me up and said, "Can you find me a bunch of J5? I knew what J5 was. It's a pipe that goes down the hole. And there had been a problem. They just weren't making enough of it. So I found a bunch of it had been pulled from the old wells, and they'd straightened it and pressure tested it and everything. So it was as good as new. but it's about half the price of new.
Wow.
See, so if you have a little knowledge, it can work into, you know, if someone had called somebody else up and say, I need a load of J5, they wouldn't know what the hell they were talking about. Mm. I knew because I knew J5 was an insert pipe in the well. So.
That's amazing. That brings me to another subject. What kind of books do you read now? What type of information do you look at now?
I still read business books. Some motivational stuff.
Uh-huh.
My readers send me books all the time. I've got stacks and stacks of. My library is about 3,000 books altogether.
No, I gave you a book.
Yeah, I've got yours.
It's in there somewhere.
I've read at it. I haven't got through it.
I understand.
It's laying right in there.
One of those thick ones. I got crazy.
It's laying right in there next to my chair.
Right, right.
It and three others.
Okay.
So, but I read all the time. I mean, I may not finish some books, but I'll read through them, and I'll mark my pages and go. You'll find books laying all over the house that I've got open at different places. I'll pick them up. If I've got nothing to do, I'll sit back and read a few pages.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I keep mine different places by the bed, in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
Different places I'm going to be.
Well,
on a regular basis. You know.
Well, my basement is not finished. It's not finished out. And so I brought all of my books and everything. I've got box after box after box of books down there.
Yeah.
Got letters from people like Steve Wozniak, Apple Computer, Steve Wynn out in Las Vegas, and personal letter from Richard Nixon. Had a autographed copy of his memoirs, but it got left in storage shed and got wet. And there's nothing left of it. I mean, it's...
That happens. That happens. Sorry to hear that.
But then I got...
Can't get him to do another one.
I guess not. Had an offer to...
He's gone.
Offer to buy into 5% of a little old movie called Superman.
Huh.
Some unknown actor by the name of Christopher Reeves. You know. Now, this was right after the Lone Ranger had gone... down the tubes. They took Clayton Moore's mask off. They wouldn't let him wear his mask anymore. And then the movie came out and absolutely nothing at the box office.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, there we go, Superman. You know. this guy's name's Christopher Reeves, and George Reeves was Superman on television.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Okay, uh-huh. I thought, there we go again.
No, nope. So you didn't buy it, huh?
I didn't buy it.
Well, could have made your big one there, huh?
Could have bought a chunk of Apple Computer. My wife said, who in their right mind would buy a computer called an Apple?
Yeah, really.
Okay.
I mean, really.
Wow.
Well, Forrest Gump bought some.
Oh, yeah.
Some of your money, I suppose. We're talking with Jim Straw. This is Logical Soul Talk. I'm Dr. Michael Craig, and we're sitting here with three entrepreneurs and Mr. Straw talking about his experiences and loves and hates and business trials and tribulations and experiences and happinesses and things. And we've got about 5 minutes here. We've got to go. So is that about right? Yeah. So normally I take calls at this time, but since we're pre-recording this show, I'm sorry you're not going to be able to call in, but please tune in Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We'd love to have you join us. blogtalkradio.com/logicalsoul, or you can just go to logicalsoul.com. We've got links there on the front page. We usually feature our guests on the front page, and you're probably going to see Jim's picture there.
And
his bio. We're going to tell all the dirty little secrets we learned here today about him. Posted on the blog, and so you'll get to learn those things. So, final few minutes here, Jim. We're just going to wrap it up. Is there anything you wanted to add, or anything you haven't told us that's sort of people just need to know, or that you're dying to tell them?
Oh, they need to buy my new book, Mustard Seed, Shovels, and Mountains.
That's going to be available on Amazon and Borders.
It's on Amazon, Borders, everywhere, supposedly, anyway.
That's great.
In another week or so. It's only $9.95.
It's
a little short book.
About 100 pages.
About 100 pages. It's a little one.
Okay.
I just knocked it out because it's something people needed to know.
Yeah, that's true. People need to know that for sure. And your experience is definitely going to help a lot of people, and we're going to make sure we get it out there. And
well, I just want the next generation to be a lot more prepared than I was.
Sounds like you were pretty prepared.
No.
Well, at least you had the sense to go talk to some people who were prepared and didn't know what they were talking
about. Right.
And but I guess that's why we're here.
That's what I want to do for the next generation. I want them to look at the material and say, well, that's the way it's done. And people say, well, you don't talk about using computers and this. No, methods never change. Mm-hmm. Applications change every day. Mm-hmm. People say, you still talk about using a typewriter. Yeah, that's because that's the way I did it. But a computer does just as well as a typewriter. Mm-hmm. It's an application. The method is what you've got to learn.
Right.
So
you just need to outsource those books over to the Philippines or somewhere and retype it and put it in different languages or terms. Yeah.
Don't try that. I had someone once wanting to change my translate my material into German.
Ah. Okay.
So he took one of my books. That's 40 years ago nearly. He took one of my books and translated it into German.
I can imagine.
Sold fairly well in Germany.
Uh-oh.
Then I started getting letters and phone calls from people who did not speak no English, nothing but German, and the German.
And they were upset about something, right?
I don't know what they were talking about. I had translators working on the letters and everything, but
oh my goodness.
Don't do it unless you know the language you're translating into.
Well, my wife is German, so we won't have a problem with that. Sometimes the translations are a little funny, because I've amused my mother-in-law on quite a few occasions in my attempts to speak German.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't speak English, so I had to speak German. And when I first asked for her daughter's hand in marriage, this is before I met her over the phone, I was going to call her parents and ask for her hand in marriage. And of course, hand in German is Hand, but dog in German is Hund. And so I made the mistake of saying, "Kann ich dein Tochter's Hund in Hacken?" And there was total silence at the other end, and she was like, and my wife asked later, "Well, did you call my mom?" I called her. She was very quiet. I'm sure she was very touched by my question. She says, "No, she was on the floor rolling in laughter." And she asked if I could marry your dog. Sometimes translations get a little lost.
I know Charles Aronson Machine Works up in Arcadia, New York, may you rest in peace. Charles manufactured and, well, designed, manufactured, and had patents on all kind of positioners. Now, positioners are used in welding. You want a thing to hold a thing at this position so you can weld it right there. So he had positioners. And they translated his advertising into Norwegian or Swedish or one of those Danish, one of those countries up there. But in their language, positioning refers to a pregnant woman.
Oh, no.
It could be a little tricky.
And so he said he had a hell of a time with the people.
Oh, yeah. This lost in translation is mean something in business. What was that, Coca-Cola's fiasco when they sent Coke over to China? And the expression, Coke adds life, was translated as Coke brings your ancestors back to the dead. They didn't do too well for that.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, we're talking with Jim Straw, and we're about to wind this up. And actually, it's been an hour, so we're gonna call it quits today. I want to thank you for joining me today. Jim, thank you for being a part of this interview. I've really enjoyed talking with you. It's a pleasure listening to you. And I got a lot more questions, I'm sure. After I leave here, I'll probably have 20 more that I forgot to ask you.
Don't come back.
And we'll have you. We'll be back, I guess, tomorrow? No. Just kidding. No, we'll schedule something and do it again sometime.
Yeah, thanks. Definitely.
So I'm Dr. Michael Craig. This is Logical Soul Talk. Thanks for joining us.